people talk about private and business, there's no actual thing that's different. There's a reason why the biggest companies that still exist in the world are named by last names, because it's personal.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to the Fast Forward Podcast. I'm so excited to continue the discussion called World Opportunity, where I'm sharing perspectives and information about how you can do business and build your career worldwide. Of course, we know there is a ton of economic and political instability right now, and a lot of us are wondering what is our next move and how can we, in some cases, just survive. And for others of us, we're still kind of like on a thriving path. And I thought it would be helpful to continue bringing in folks who know a lot about a lot from all over the world to share their journeys and their wisdom. This conversation is one that I'm particularly excited about because I met this amazing person 2 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long. And I actually met her at a conference in Amsterdam. No, let me correct that. Someone else knew each of us and connected us via email. I get to the conference and I'm like, wait, that's that person that I've been emailing. And so I'm thrilled for you to get a chance to hear the wisdom that I've gotten, the incredible blessing to be able to soak up. And so let me allow her to introduce herself. Miss Kimberly, can you please introduce yourself and tell us about you?
Thank you so much, Kaylin. It's such a pleasure to be on your podcast, finally. I know we've been going back and forth to do our own catch up, but I'm really happy that we found a time to do this conversation as well. So thank you so much for inviting me. A little bit about me. I was born and raised here in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. But my roots are not Dutch in that sense. Obviously, you can see I'm a Black woman. But yes, my father is from Ghana, West Africa. My mother is from Suriname, South America. And they met here and I was born here. And I have a background that's quite diverse in terms of, you know, what I've done up until the person you see in front of you today. So I've gone from banking and finance to consultancy, traveling around the world as a consultant in strategy and corporate governance to working in technology and having my own tech startups and exited successfully as well. And today I run the Bold New Company. And my focus is really to reinvent or actually get back to what we're building companies for and how we are thinking about who we're impacting and the people behind it need support in order to drive that change. And I pride myself and I'm also very honored to be working with a lot of great minds from all over the world who are building incredible businesses, incredible initiatives, and I'm working on them to make sure that they can lead those things successfully.
Love that so much. I'm big on names. I know I had a whole thing on the podcast when I changed the name of the company and the podcast. So tell me more about the name of your company, the Bold New Company.
Yeah, so actually up until last year, my company was just simple. My name is Ofori. The company's name was Ofori and Company. Like quite simple. But I realized that as my focus was evolving and as the feedback I was getting was changing and becoming quite focused on that boldness, I realized that it was something I wanted to incorporate even more. So I remember asking a few of my ex-clients, like, how would they describe the work that I've done, the things that I how I made them feel even. And a lot of the times the word boldness came about. You know, you help us make bold decisions. You have such bold ideas. We take a lot of bold steps when we're working with you. And I was like, okay, the boldness is definitely a thing. And then the new company is really because being in the startup scale-up space for quite some time, I realized that a lot of founders want to build something new, but they're stuck in old systems and in old environments that they need to build that in. And so it doesn't really work. And so I thought combining them wanting to build something new and doing it the bold way allows them to create a different path. And so I joined those two together and say, hey, we're building bold new companies in a bold new way.
I love that. I love that so much because a couple of things that I loved about it. Number one, I love that you asked your former clients for feedback. I've talked about that several times on the podcast about like, hey, if you want to know what to do in your company, go talk to the people who you've already experienced success with. And that customer feedback is so important because sometimes they see strength in us that we didn't even see, right? They'll tell us like, wow, I saw this or you did this for me and I didn't even know what happened. So I'm happy that you were able to see new benefits and see new positive qualities about yourself through their eyes, because a lot of times we trust our clients about us more than we trust ourselves. That was one. I wanted to make sure to say that, but also I love the fact that you have such a layered and storied career and you've been able to bring all of that into the work that you do for other people. So can you tell the listeners more about how you've incorporated your own career and the steps that you've taken in the bold new company?
Right. I love that question because I've been reflecting on that this year as well. And at the beginning of this year, also, as I was reevaluating what we're going to do. And a lot of people think or assume from the outside looking in that everything I've done was strategic or planned, right? So, you know, I was building a career and I was taking intentional steps to get somewhere. But quite frankly, you know, I rolled into most of the things that I've done that are on my resume. And part of that came from the, you know, not having a very traditional environment where I grew up in. And also, I, at a very young age, had to make decisions that were quite mature for my age to think about, you know, the future in a different way that other 16-year-olds would have. And so when my friends were, you know, thinking about when was the next party, I was thinking about, okay, how can I get me a job that helps me to support our household, right? So there was no intentionality in the way, in the sense that, hey, I need to get to this particular career path, but I knew I needed to find a way to sustain, you know, the livelihood that we had. And I felt responsible for that. So a lot of the decisions I made very early on were circumstantially motivated. I remember being driven by the idea that if I could just help support a little bit, I can go back and think about what I'm going to do with school. Because at 16, here in the system in the Netherlands, at 16, this is when you're going to decide if you're going to go, you know, to the next stage. And I said, I'm just going to take a gap year, work, make sure we are, you know, we're financially a little bit more well-rounded, and then I can see what I do. And I ended up in the insurance industry. I fell in love with the idea that I could prove myself in a different way, because the school system here had always told me I was never going to be successful. You know, I live in a predominantly white country. And so it was very much so, in the odd chance that I would make it, I would be the exception, is what they would tell me. Now I know that's false. But it's the way that I had to make a decision and say, hey, I need to be very wise in the path that I'm taking. And so the idea was, especially for immigrant parents, is show, prove them wrong, right? Go and, you know, become the best academically that you can be to shut them up. But I felt very much in my early days already that that was never a purpose path for me. I never really felt the need to have to prove myself academically, but I did have an urgent need to understand what I was capable of and like my maximum capacity, whatever that would look like. I love so I actually went into that insurance job, which other people would say, okay, not, you know, very not very a traditional step to take. I was the youngest in the entire company, I remember doing that. But I remember that for me, it was proving myself right, that I was able to do hard things, that I was smart enough, that I was allowed to be in spaces people said I wasn't allowed to be in.
Yeah.
And once I had that first kind of experience, it opened up a whole world for me that said, hey, if I can do this, when people said I needed a university degree to do the exact job I was doing there, I can do so much more. So that's kind of the red thread. If you ask me, you know, how did I navigate my career? This is going to be the answer to almost every step I took. It was for me to find out what is the best I can do in the circumstances that I am in, and how can I challenge myself to overcome the beliefs that were imposed on me that I can't do that. So I switched into banking, knowing that everybody said you need to have a, you know, at least a university degree and banking experience. I was, you know, on paper, completely unqualified. And there I was, right, getting into those positions because I believed so hard in myself. I was going into those job interviews really convinced and delusional that I could actually pull it off.
Sometimes we need the spirit of Delulu. Sometimes that's our best friend.
We really do.
I love so much about that story because, number one, the wherewithal that you had to realize that, yes, I recognize what drives my parents, but that doesn't have to be what drives me. And I think that that is a very difficult decision that a lot of us have to make, whether it's because we are a racial minority, because we are women, right? Because we might be first generation college, you know, aspirations. And that is hard because so much of our parents' dreams become our dreams. So we become the embodiment of everything that our parents wanted to do but couldn't. So I applaud you at such a young age for being able to differentiate yourself from your parents. And then also to recognize that early wins set you up to build future resilience. So it's so important to recognize, and I was talking about this during Black History Month, the earlier you can get some wins under your belt, the better it is for you throughout your life because you have a reference point to say, hey, I know I can do X, Y, Z because I've done this before. I might not have done this exact thing, but I've done something like it and I know I pushed through. Whether that is nailing it at your first job or being the first person in your family to get a high school diploma or a college degree, being the first person in your family to buy a home, being the first person in your family to start a business. The earlier you can knock down even what's going to feel like to other people really small wins, the better it ends up being for you because life is always going to be life-in. Like the challenges are going to come, issues are going to happen. So you need the reference points of all the points before where you've gotten through and pushed through that. That's how you build. It's like compounding resilience is a compounding factor. It's like you don't build resilience one step at a time, right? What you do once and get over it, then it's like it puffs your chest out. And then you do something else and it puffs it out more. And then you're like, oh, well, I could definitely do this even bigger thing because look at these other two things I've done or 20 things, right? So especially to the younger people who are going to listen to this, please know, again, small wins, they build up over time, not because it's going to net you millions of dollars right away, but because it builds millions of dollars worth of confidence in you. And that's the part that you really need to get through stuff later on. So, yes, that was dope.
I
be thinking, girl.
I love that. Oh, you layered that. No, but it is exactly that. A lot of the times when people ask the question, you know, how do you build resilience? It's actually by doing the things.
By doing the thing. There was somebody, I can't think of her name. If I find it, I'll probably try to tag it. But I think she's a therapist. Anyway, she talked about the difference between self-worth and self-esteem. And she was like, self-worth is inherent. Every human being has worth and nobody is more worthy of kindness or support or love than anybody else. But right. self-esteem is built, and you build self-esteem by keeping your promises to yourself, by doing the things you said you would do, and by achieving your goals. So every time, like, for example, if I tell myself, I'm going to stop smoking, I'm going to go 1 week without smoking. Every time I do that, when I do that, I'm building my self-esteem because I'm letting myself know I can trust myself. Mm-hmm. Every time I say I'm going to launch this podcast or I'm going to, you know, write this proposal and I do it, that is me telling myself, you can trust me to push through. You can trust me to do what I need to do. And that builds self-esteem. And so a lot of times, what we embody as our worth, and you talk about that in your story too, what we embody as our worth is so externally focused. Well, if they say I can do this and I can, if they say I'm, if they say I'm worthy, when really a lot of times what's bugging us is that we're breaking promises to ourselves. We know we're not honoring ourselves. We know we're not fulfilling what really drives us. And so as a result, we're hurting our own self-esteem through not keeping up with ourselves, through not being worthy to ourselves. And then we call that unworthiness when really it's us inside job. Well,
there's so many levels to what you just said. And I think the biggest takeaway for me from what you said is definitely being very consciously aware. Being very consciously aware that everything that you do or don't do is a direct reflection of how you see yourself.
Yes. Yes. And I think, you know, even again, looking at your story. So obviously, number one, you have a multicultural background. So being both South American and African, but living in Europe, right? Growing up in a European country. That alone gives you a very different perspective of the world. So can you share how you have reconciled the differences even in your identity to create a career that you love and that you're proud of?
Ooh. You know, it's, I think it's an ongoing journey because in as much as, so being born in this country, immediately you come out of the womb, you are othered, right? There's no way you are not going to feel, even before you can speak, even before you can comprehend what's happening, you can tell, you can feel, you see, you are being treated differently, but you don't comprehend why yet. And so I think that is something that's really, really important to take note in this entire experience, because I remember you and I were sharing, I was actually eating your pizza slice.
That was some good pizza too, by the way.
That was a nice pizza slice. So I remember, and you telling me that you have never, you know, felt less than, or you were never made to feel less than. And because you were in schools where the teachers looked like you and the doctors looked like you. And for me, that sounded like euphoria. That was like, this is a movie scene, right? Because I grow up in an environment where it's the complete opposite, right? I am the exemption to the rule. I am different. I am not part of. So I'm constantly made aware of the fact that we are not the same. And not in a sense, and it would have been nicer if that would have been, you know, you're so special in a good way, but that's not what it was, right? It clear, because I've had some, you know, Dutch white people ask me, doesn't that make you feel special? I said, if they said it nicely,
you know? Right. Right. No, I think we're defining special in a different way, but all right, friend,
I guess. That's not the kind of special I'm trying to feel. So it was really, you know, growing up already, you know, okay, there's something here different. And I am already conditioned to prove myself to people. I shouldn't be having to prove myself for anything. But, you know, going to school and you're 4 years old and your teacher othering you from day one in school, telling you, oh no, you don't have to do that, or you don't get to do that, or your kind doesn't do that. You're four, right? So it's this really deeply ingrained situation of, okay, how do I then navigate and decide who I want to be if this is what I can't be? I only see what I can't be around me, apparently.
Wow.
So that's really deep, because you're constantly confronted with that. The majority of your, you know, your younger years is spent in that environment. And then you come home, luckily for me, to parents who built in, I think subconsciously built in, a sense of self-pride. So they never said, you know, you are everything and everything. But they also never said, you know, you are lesser than. And they never said, right, you cannot do the same thing other people are doing. What, unfortunately, right, I was taught is that, yes, you do have to prove yourself 10 times more, because people will not believe that you're capable. But, you know, in the environment that you are, you can't escape that. So what that gave me as baggage, because I saw it was a weight that I had to get off my shoulder, was to now step into the professional workspace and not feel like I need to be humble or grateful to be there. And I know I had this conversation with you over that slice of pizza, where there was a huge difference between an African coming to a workplace, you know, having had his degrees, work experience, qualified, showing up for a board meeting, an African American in the same position, and then a European Black person. The European Black person will feel like they need to be humble and grateful to be there, because that's the way you were conditioned, to be happy that you are even allowed to be in this room. So I had to shake that off immediately when I jumped into the workplace and say, no, I am qualified, if not overqualified, for this position. If I am here, I was invited into the room, that's because I'm supposed to be in the room. And so there's all of these layers that I had to kind of peel off, where I could clearly see the difference between somebody who was raised not being told that they are lesser than anybody else, and then me having to then overcome that idea before I could then step into my power, because you don't feel powerful. You can't feel powerful about yourself if you don't know who you are.
So many things came up in what you just said, because we never really shake our formative years. So what happens to you from birth to, like, I'd say 21, it creates the baggage, the strength, the joy, the optimism, the pessimism, the fear, the anxiety that we have to navigate through the rest of our lives. And I'm happy that you can see, because some of us never see that. Some of us never are able to unpack, to get to the root cause of, like, oh, this thing. I'm happy that you were able to see the difference between something that was an intrinsic quality in you as an individual, something that was a family trait, something that was a cultural trait, and then something that is systemic to your geographic location. Because again, a lot of us are never able to separate those four. So we take systemic factors and put it on us as individuals. If I just work hard and work hard, no, you can't outrun racism. Like, it's going to hit you in the face somewhere, somehow, right? You can't outrun it. You could listen. You can run all you want to. You better be Usain Bolt, because you can't run faster than racism running. And it's like, for some of us too, our family's words, because I've had to push through that too. So I tell people all the time, my schooling experience was drastically different than my experience at home. Like, school was like, you can do anything. We expect you to be the best in the world. Like, you are the best that the chance to offer. As it should be. Exactly. At home, it's the colorism. It's the emotional abuse. It's the substance addictive parents, right? It's all the things that are like, can I do this? And I'm so grateful that I had such an intense school experience that was able to undercut the shenanigans that were happening at home. Because school had been any less rigorous or any less intense, you mm-hmm. wouldn't be talking to me right now, guaranteed. Because again, the confidence that you see from me, it came from my grandmother and the schools that I went to, period. Those two sources. Nothing else in my life was building this. And again, I think for a lot of us, we try to outrun systemic, cultural, and family failure with individual mm-hmm. effort. And it just can't work like that. No. And so to that point, this is why I'm happy to hear what you're doing at the Bold New Company, because we need community to outrun all of those heavy weights that are on us. Right. You're not going to push through five generations of feeling less than, or five generations of working yourself to the bone to prove that you're worthy by yourself. You need other voices to come. And they might have a totally different background. Like you said, what I said to you in that pizza shop, that was like game changing and transformative. You, what you just said to me, because y'all, we was talking before we hit record on this. What we were just talking about right now is forcing me to confront some things with me. So when you talk to people who have very different backgrounds than you, they will force you to confront all of that weight so you can decide, hey, here is what my euphoria is going to look like. Here is what a beautiful utopian existence could look like for me. And mm-hmm. I'm going to now work toward that. That's a very different thing than just running yourself ragged on a hamster wheel.
I know. And I think this is also why, for me, it was so important to stand still for a moment. Because in as much as I can speak about, you know, some people will say I've had many achievements, I see it as I've done things. I've experienced a lot of things. I've undergone a lot of challenges. I've achieved some success. I've also achieved a lot of failures. And I think that there's a lot of things in there to unpack when we talk about the identity question and when we talk about what drove me and drives me. Because I was constantly still running towards the idea that there was going to be some point of accomplishment that would make me feel good enough. If I strip everything away, it was for me to constantly feel, okay, and now I can say, I told you. And it wasn't even to other people.
Yep. Yeah. And if you never reach that thing, always something. You never reached it.
By the time I was, you know, reaching it or had reached it, I was already thinking about what is next. Like, this clearly is not it, because I'm not feeling different. So this achievement is not it. So clearly there needs to be another level. And it was not until, I think I want to say the past 18 months, going on 2 years now, that I really had to sit myself down several times in quietness, not listening to anybody else, because you can hear the applause and you can hear all the praise. And I speak on global stages and people will think you are amazing. And then, but you come home and you feel like this is not it. So if this is not it, what is it then? And I realized that in as much as I was partially doing walking in my purpose, I've always been geared towards helping other people grow and elevate others and building ecosystems around that, I wasn't fully aligned with how I'm supposed to show up in that. And that was the difference. As long as I wasn't going to change the ideas I had held about myself, about what it looks like to be me, then I was never going to feel fulfilled doing those things and doing them in a way that is aligned with my superpowers. And so the biggest transition for me has been that I actually draw a lot of women towards me. I've always had that. However, ego said, you live in this country where they said you can never be respected for being in this field and being a consultant and doing all of these things. You need to get, you know, ahead and work with the McKinseys and with the big companies and with the big banks, because then they're going to respect you. Yep. And the joke's on me, because I was not getting myself the respect with those things. I've done all of them and I still couldn't really look myself in the mirror and say, you did that. This is enough. So I went back to the moments where I did feel like, wow, you're really doing something. And that was when I was working with individuals and making impacts in their lives. And they were mostly women who needed to be reminded of who they were in whatever role they were, as entrepreneurs, as executive leaders, and seeing that impact every time without an exception. I felt I was aligned. I felt like I could look myself in the mirror and say, this is who you are. This is why you are here. This is why you had to go through all of the things you went through and go through all the corporate ladders and go through all the entrepreneurial journeys so that you could impart that wisdom into these individuals. And so it's this really crazy journey of finding yourself then and realizing that your identity is what's going to be most important in whatever career or business decision you make. We try to see it separately from one another. And we've been taught that in business school, that it's two separate things. People talk about private and business. There's no actual thing that's different. There's a reason why the biggest companies that still exist in the world are named by last names, because it's personal.
Hold on. So much. So much to that. Okay. Let me try to yank out three things. We're going to start at the front and work our way back, because I think they're really all connected, because you are absolutely right. What we love about business is because of actions that a person took. Mm. And I tell especially my startup clients this, so much of your early business success is going to be based on how you show up, because the company is quite literally being birthed out of you, out of your creativity, out of your failures, out of your connections, out of your money, right? All the things. And so you can't leave you at home. And I'm so happy that you can appreciate how your identity is a feature and not a bug. Because for a lot of us, we say, well, I need to become a blank canvas. I don't want to be on camera. I don't want to do this. No, your company is you, right? Mm-hmm. Everything you've learned, you know, you said achieved a failure. I love that. Because guess what? Even when you fail, you had to work hard to drop that ball. Like you had to work real hard to miss that opportunity. And all the effort that you put in is not wasted, because you still learn something. You might have still built relationships. Like all of that is a part of your identity. That's all you. Everything that you are, and this is to the listeners, everything that you are as a person is a part of your story. You don't get to leave any of it behind. You might not always call it out. You might not always like it. You might not always feel comfortable with it, but it's still a part of you because it's informing your decision making. When you decide not to make that call, when you are too fearful to take the jump, when you are excited to make the call, when you are pushing forward fast to make the jump, all of that is because of who you are. And so then to lead to the last point that you made, Kimberly, your ego, right? We think ego is just either like negative traits or arrogance. No, ego is also our failures, our anxieties, the things we're afraid of, the things that we are delusional about what we can do, even when we can't. It's the things that we do really well. Like ego is all of you. Yeah. And in psychology, you know, we learned that you got the id, the ego, and the super id. So the super id is all external. The id is all internal. It's instinctive. You don't even have to think about it. It's just subconscious. But the ego, that's that mediator. That's the middle person that's telling you, hey, my instinct is telling me to do this, but all of this history, all of these memories are building me to think I can't. What you gonna do in the middle? And so my challenge to the professionals and the entrepreneurs who are gonna hear this episode is, the ego is not the driver. The ego is simply your GPS system that's trying to tell you where to go. You still have to make to go there. And so if your ego is telling you, hey, I can do this. There's nothing stopping me, even though all the external sources are telling you, hey, maybe this isn't the right time. Take a pause like Kimberly did. Guess what? That's ego, right? And if your ego is telling you, no, don't do that. You can't. Because remember what happened when we were 10 and we couldn't. That's ego too. You still have to rationalize it to make the decision. So ego is not something to be afraid of. It has really no, ego is an absolute value. So you go, let's take it back to math, right? Middle school math. Ego is an absolute value. It's neither positive or negative. It's just telling you what is. And then right. from there, you make the best decision that you can based on what you know you want to get done. All right. You know what? It's so much that we could keep digging into with this, and we got to have a part two for sure.
We do.
Actually, the part two is going to be in Amsterdam. I'm going to come see you and we're going to do it live. But as a final question, because we've talked a lot about identity, how can Black women founders in particular build an ecosystem of advisors, partners, clients, investors that is mutually beneficial, but also helps us to maintain our authenticity?
You know, I think we're going to have to find out together. But what has worked for me is to be vocal about it. And I think one of the biggest things I have lacked seeing women of color do is ask for what you want. Ask for what you need. Because we, for whatever reason, there are different reasons why we don't ask. A lot of the times it has to do with self-imposed limiting beliefs. It's either a sign of us not wanting to look weak or dependent, but a lot of the times there's an underlying layer of disappointment and rejection. And I really want us to break through with that, that even though we've been told no so many times, still be vocal, still put out there what you want, what you need. Somebody is going to listen and resonate with you. And that's all I've been doing for the past, I want to say 7 years using LinkedIn as a platform, is to put out there what I'm working on and what I need from that. And it's in everybody's way is going to be different and how you vocalize that and put that into writing or into work, into video. But the most important thing is let people know what's important to you, what matters to you, what you bring, and then also how they can add to that. And I think as you keep doing that and keep showing up, the right people are going to locate you and you're going to be able to connect with the people that are going to help you move forward.
Yeah. That, first of all, I needed that today. I ain't going to get into no whole bunch of details. But that's like personal advice. But also, I think that that's powerful because you're right. Like hearing no over and over again, it will make you silence yourself. And that's a part of resilience too, is not losing our voice. Always having your voice, no matter what. I needed that, sis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful for this conversation today. Yes, as she says, she is always on LinkedIn dropping gems. Please, please, please follow her. I'm going to make sure to put a link in the description to all of the socials and places where you can find Kimberly. You will not be disappointed by adding this voice to your ecosystem. Kimberly, thank you again so much. I'm so appreciative for you.
Thank you for having me.
And yes, y'all. Yes. Again, remember, the entire world is open to us if we do it, if we are willing to check our egos and step out and use our voice. So on that note, of course, let us know down in the comments, how are you using your voice? How are you battling your ego? And be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And I'm going to catch y'all on the next one. Bye.